I like a love story on the lamb. I'm willing to give it a try.
I like the phrase on the lamb.
I know.
Welcome to Book Talk Etc., a podcast bound to grow your TBR. I'm Tina.
And I'm Renee.
And this is a conversational podcast about books and more from two Midwest mood readers who are easily distracted by new releases. And this week, we are sharing our thoughts on some new releases that we've recently read.
If you enjoy listening, we'd love for you to follow us on Apple Podcasts or subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And if you have a minute, please consider leaving us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or sharing us on social media. All of this truly helps other book lovers find us. Hey, Tina.
Hi, Renee. How are you?
I am good. I had a teeny tiny bit of struggle with the reading this week,
ooh,
which I'll tell you a little bit.
I got so excited.
I know. It feels like, very dramatic. I haven't mentioned anything to you because
I thought
I'd save it for today.
Save it for the show.
How are you?
I'm good. I had a fabulous reading experience. So I will offset my last week. I felt bad. I had like two duds. So I'm excited this week. All of these I highly recommend. So I'll pick up, the kind of positive talk.
Well, I actually really liked mine. I don't want to say I didn't like my new releases, but I tried to go all out and bring three brand new releases. Mm-hmm. And that was a slope. I could not make it up. So
I could not climb that hill.
I had a little problem with that, which I can give you some details on. Okay. So I had to shift around for my latest read is my point. Right.
I feel you. Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to jump into My Loving Lately. I'm excited about it because during our Books We've Been Meaning to Read episode, I was talking about a method that works for me to save recommendation sources. I don't love a spreadsheet. I need something on my phone that I could just easily do. So My Loving Lately is saving recommendation sources on Libit. And I brought Libit before. That's an app. I brought it when I was talking about my library scanner. And I do still use it to track books I own, but I recently started using it to track my TBR. And someone suggested a great idea. They said I could use tabs or tags on StoryGraph, which is awesome. That's very smart to do. But what I'm doing in Libib and why it's different is I am listing very specifically the rec source and why I added it. And I have a separate shelf. So I have my owned shelf, like the books that I own, and then I have TBR unowned as its own shelf. For example, our last community read was The Women by Kristen Hanna. And one of our patrons, while we were, having the chat, made a great pairing recommendation of Dust Child by Win Fan Quay Mai. So on Libib, I added Dust Child to my unowned TBR shelf. And then in the description, I wrote Rec from Jax on Discord when talking about The Women. So I can't put that as a tag, obviously, in StoryGraph, because that would be crazy. But now I know, oh my gosh, okay, this hold came in or this book came in. I know where it was from, but also why I added it and like what the context was. Because I promise you, I get these holds come in from the library and I'm like, I've never seen this book in my entire life. And then I know I have. I obviously put a hold on it. So I'm pretty excited about this. I love having that greater detail. And not only that, I hope it will help me remember why I added the books, but also it helps me mood read through my TBR. You know what I'm saying? So like, I'm like, okay, I'm in the mood for a book about friendship. I'm in the mood for a book that'll take me to a new country, whatever. Whatever I'm in the mood for, and kind of go back in there and say, okay, would this do it? It gives me more personalized. It's like a blurb for myself, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this helps me with my shelf editions too, because I just popped open the shelf. I'm like, oh, what's my shelf edition? I'm like, oh, I know exactly what book it is and I know why I saved it. Mm-hmm. And not just like, oh, Renee said it, but like, what about your recommendation?
What about
it? On my list.
That's the key.
So that is the key. So I am been very much enjoying it. The app is not sophisticated. It's not, it can be, it's very rudimentary. It's not like super beautiful, but it's very functional, which I'm totally fine with. So what I've been loving lately is saving my recommendation sources and the why on the app Libib.
Okay. That's great. That is a really helpful suggestion. Also, that's genius because I don't know how many times, I'm sure this happens to lots of people, I'll get a Libby notification of a book that came in and I have no idea why. Mm-hmm. I put that on my hold at some point.
Couldn't tell you.
I'm like, no. But so that, yeah, it would be really helpful to add that tidbit so that mm-hmm. right. you know why you wanted to read that book at mm-hmm. some point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So far, yeah. So good.
Okay. Well, my loving lately today is brought to me by you, Tina. Ooh. Yeah. It's the Physio Natural Heat Therapy Foot Booties that you got me.
I was like, what on earth are you talking about? Yes, I did. Yes.
Okay. These are microwavable booties and feet warmers. Mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. had never heard of something. You sent these to me. They are exactly what I could use, and I have been thoroughly enjoying them. So they're exactly what they say. They're booties that you put in the microwave. They provide soothing, deep penetrating heat without toxic materials. So they are made of 100% natural grains and clay beads. They're weighted. You can walk around in them. I walk around in, you know, in my kitchen, but typically I put them on in the morning when I also heat up my neck wrap. So I've got my neck wrap and my feet warmers. I just love it. You know, I walk a ton, which was why these were such a great gift for me. And also, these would be great for people who need to help bolster their circulation and flexibility. They help relieve pain associated with different foot and ankle issues. For example, Achilles tendonitis was listed on there, and one of my sons has that, so I thought I should get him a pair of these. Mm. I think they're just the best gift. Mother's Day's coming up. I mean, I don't know who wouldn't enjoy something like this, so I'm very much enjoying it. They are the Physio Natural Heat Therapy Foot Booties.
Well, I'm glad they were
Tina.
A hit. Yeah, I'm glad they were a hit. I typed into Amazon gifts for people who walk a lot, and it came up. The algorithm delivered, and I'm glad it was. I'm glad it worked for you.
Yes, I really like them.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so let me tell you about my latest read. This one so it sounds like you might have changed the book that you initially were going to mm-hmm. bring to the show. Same here. For no real reason. The one I was reading, I was enjoying, but I only had a physical copy of it. So I was like, I need an audiobook. And I just popped this on 2 days ago. What do you know? I've finished it right away. It's The Divorcees by Rowan Beard. This I like. It is a book that actually I brought to one of my books on the radar. It's 1951, and it is about this place in Reno, Nevada. It's called the Golden Yarrow, and what it is a divorce ranch. And so in the 50s, in order to get a divorce, there had to be very specific criteria that women had to meet in order to request this divorce. And one of the states that allowed for it was Reno, Nevada. And in order to get this residency, you had to stay there for 6 weeks. Then you could claim to be a resident of Nevada and the judge would grant a divorce, basically. So they created these divorce ranches, and the Golden Yarrow is allegedly one of the most respectable. So it's all very wealthy, well-to-do women who go here. And we follow this character named Lois, and she is from Chicago. And she is struggling a little bit because she wanted the divorce, and she had asked to leave her husband. She moves there to Reno, and she doesn't really have a reason. I'm using air quotes because I did not know this. In order to get a divorce in the 50s, apparently the woman, there had to be cause. It had to be abuse. It had to be impotence was one. It had to be very like specific criteria that they had to meet. Otherwise, she couldn't just say, I don't want to be married anymore. It had mm-hmm. to be very specific criteria. So we're following Lois. And at first it was a bumpy ride. I was like, okay, is this going to be a DNF? Because she used the word skittering. She used the word
my favorite
frothing
word.
And teeming. And I made a little TikTok about it because I was like, oh my God, these words, what are you, you're using all of my anti-words in the first couple 5%. However, we got there. So once she gets to the ranch, I was in because she's this, you know, Midwestern woman who takes a train over to Reno. And when she gets there, it's kind of fun because all the other women are these formerly bored housewives who are now getting a divorce because they have another lover or because they, whatever, they have their own reasons. And it was really fun to read through and see what brought them there. They spend their days riding horses and their nights flirting with cowboys. And it's fun. But then when it starts to get really good for me is when Greer Lang arrives. And Greer Lang is this enigmatic woman. She's gorgeous and totally unlike the other women. The other women are very much into appearances and being, you know, even though they're getting a divorce, there's still like social hierarchy and like they follow the rules for the women at that time. Whereas Greer does not care. She does what she wants to do. And everyone around her is like, they're like kind of desperate to impress this woman. For one reason or another, Greer and Lois hit it off. And so they become friends throughout their time together. I don't want to say a ton more than that, but this surprised me in really good ways. It was fun at first, and I very much enjoyed learning about what it was like to be a woman in this time period. They literally had no agency. They could either live with their husbands or live with their father, and that's why they had to go to Reno to like have any sort of say in their lives. There was a woman that owned the ranch. She had her two children and like this right-hand woman that helped her out. So a lot of female characters and just interesting shenanigans that took place. But I will say it does get a little bit more deep as you read on into the book. I really liked Greer as a character. I remember this time a character came up to them and was like, you know, hitting on them. Oh, wait, let me buy your drinks. She's like, that's enough. And that was it. Like sent him away. And I'm like, hell yeah. So she became somebody that I too was beguiled by. I was like into her. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I don't think it's going to be like on my favorites of the year list. I think it was very entertaining. It was good on audio once you settle in with it. Where I think some folks are not enjoying it is because of the cover. The cover and some of the blurbs make it look like a thriller. This is definitely
I can picture the cover. It's very summery.
Yeah, summery. There's a woman like pulled up to the side of the pool. It's very much not a thriller. People magazine called this a rollicking thriller.
Really? Like,
this is not thrilling at all.
I know the cover and I know a bit about, I never thought it was a thriller. Yeah. That's so strange.
Super not a thriller. And it says it's a poignant coming of age story, which I can see, I thought this was really good. I think if you like stories about like historical fiction that focus on women, I did not know divorce ranches were a thing. I enjoyed reading about them. And overall, I had a good time with it. And one of the nice things about this book is that it gets better as you read on. So I do recommend it. This was The Divorcees by Rowan Beard.
Okay. All right. Good. Makes you wonder if someone at People magazine got books mixed up.
I was like, did you read the book?
Did you even read
Or did
it?
You just like look at the cover? Because I could see where you got thriller. It's not a thrill. I mean, there were some shenanigans and there's some fun, but I wouldn't say it's like a thriller.
And that's not fair. You can't throw out thriller if there's no thrills.
I agree. And this is a debut too. So I'm like, okay, I'm glad that I kept on with it. Because honestly, at first I was like, oh, I don't know, skittering. And she said it often. But she was talking about lizards. In the desert. And I was like, you know what? I could see why you get that descriptive word. That's one of Renee's like anti-word. But it's in every book I've ever read.
It's in almost every book.
Truly.
And I have gotten so many messages from people who had never noticed it and now can't stop noticing it. And I always say, I'm sorry. I know. I hear you. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
And once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yes, truly.
Okay, so my latest read, I'm very loosely saying latest. This is from my backlist. I am pulling from my backlist. I'm going to be completely honest. I have not brought this to the show. And I wanted to bring a variety of books. So here's what happened. I read my other two new releases. And then I started on my third because I thought, you know what? I'm going to go for three new releases. And then I got stuck behind it. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was not going to finish it. And I do want to read it. So rather than skim it, which I don't want to do, but I'm just struggling with it. If you want to know what it is, because I am going to read it, I probably will bring it back because I'm going to give it, you know, a full read. It's City in Ruins by Don Winslow, one of my most anticipated spring reads. I don't know what Don's doing. And this is his third and final book because he's retired.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing, but I need this book to to really pick itself up. So
okay. Well, we'll wait.
I got stuck behind it. And today I want to share Sunburn by Laura Lippman. Mm-hmm. And this is, like I said, this is backlist. And luckily, I have a full review for it. So in the story, it is 1995, and in a dive bar in a Delaware beach town, we meet Polly Costello, who has just ditched her husband and child. And we also meet Adam, a good-looking guy who claims to have been stuck in town with a broken-down truck. Both of these two have rather shady pasts and even murkier intentions in their current situations. But over the course of the summer, Polly and Adam abandon themselves to a steamy affair. Still, each holds something back from the other, and that something could be dangerous, even lethal, secrets. And then someone dies. Was it an accident or part of a plan? All right, so this is psychological suspense. I wanted to bring this because, number one, I have not talked about this on the show, and I know there are a lot of people who enjoy cat and mouse stories and cons and schemes, and I think this would fall into that category. So within the first 50 pages, for me, it gave me the vibes of The Kind Worth Killing by Peter Swanson, mm-hmm. which I loved. So if you like that, I think you could like this one. And the reason it gave me those vibes, in this story, no one is especially likable or trustworthy. I don't mind that in my reading. I actually really kind of like it. And because of that, that kept me going. Now, I'm just going to highlight what I really enjoyed about this story. The web of deceit playing out between Polly and Adam kept me reading and kept me off balance because I didn't know who to trust. And I like not knowing who to trust. The story is told in alternating perspectives between Polly and Adam with a sprinkling of other point of views. And that didn't bother me at all. I mean, alternating perspectives can be hit or miss for me. I didn't mind it in this story. I love the question that I kept asking, which was, who is playing who? I think that Lippman really allows the reader to play along. She has a really good ability to tease with tidbits thrown here and there, which added a lot of confusion, and it kept me questioning what was going on and who was telling the truth. I liked the small town setting. I liked guessing about everyone's motives and the end games. I mean, what was the end game here? And the ending itself was not what I expected, and I actually really loved it. So, what do you need to know about this story? It is an all caps slow burn of the highest level. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. I'm saying that because, especially with Laura Lippman, sometimes you expect that you might get a fast-paced thriller. This is not a fast-paced thriller. The story is high on introspection, depending on which point of view you have, and the author takes her time peeling away the layers of the characters and the story. This is a 4-star read for me. I really enjoyed it. I didn't mind the slow pace, but also that's probably a bigger criticism, is it's got a slower pace. I do think if you like cat and mouse stories, and you like psychological thrillers, actually, let's just say psychological suspense with an underlying mystery, then I think you should give this one a try. So it's Sunburn by Laura Lippman.
I read this myself, and I read it in 2018. Gave it okay. 5 stars. Couldn't tell you one
Did
thing
you?
About it.
Gave it 5 stars. Okay.
I loved the cover. I remember that. And I remember really enjoying it. Couldn't tell yeah. you what it was about. So she is one, though, that I need to read more of. I've read.
Same.
This is the only book I think I've read by her. And I know she has a wide backlist that I need to explore.
Right. This reminded me that I want to read more of her books yeah. also, mm-hmm. which I know I had Prom Mom on my radar last yeah, spring, and I never read it.
Flew away. It flew away. You know what, though? This is actually a good transition because a part of what we want to do for Book Talk today is check in on our books on the radar and talk about author blurbs. Mm-hmm. And I'm the one. So, okay, one of my reading goals for the year was to really focus on my books on the radar, try and bring better picks, but then try and read them. Like, I know, what a revolution. But okay, so far this year, and I didn't count April because it's right now just April. So mm-hmm. we've brought 14 books on the radar. So 5 in January, 5 in February, 4 in March. And I'm proud to say I've read 4 of them, which doesn't sound like a lot. And I DNF'd okay, two.
Yeah.
I DNF'd two. So that's pretty good in my, mm-hmm. it's almost half that I've actually given a shot. And I really, really enjoy the 4 that I did read. So I'm like, all right, I'm not mad about that.
Okay. Yeah. You did a little better than I did. I have fully read 3
okay.
of the 14. One of them's a 5-star. One of them's my top mm-hmm. book of the year, Leaving.
Yes,
by Roxana
I saw
Robinson.
That. I saw mm-hmm. that you had picked Leaving as a book yeah. on the radar. So
when,
great
when
job
I,
on that.
When I was, I know, I forgot that I picked that as a book on the radar. And when I was looking at the list, I was giving myself like a pat on the back. Like,
I was too.
You finally picked something that really was yeah. stellar for me. And then I had 2 DNFs.
Okay. So we're similar. So
I tried yeah. 5. I read 3, tried 5.
Okay. I do have a 5-star read as well, and that was James by Percival Everett. But that, like, I just brought it because I was like, I know I want to read this, and I'm mm-hmm. excited for it, and I'm glad it held up. And what's cool, too, is that I was looking at the ones that I have not yet tried. I don't think any of them are on my, what? Why would I pick that list? Like, I truly would still like to read all of them. So I think I'm doing better than I did last year. I remember last year, most of them, I'm like, what is this book? And I remember I DNF'd a few. So I think I'm personally doing better so far. And then Renee had a really good idea to chat about some of the blurbs we were seeing on new releases. And if we like what we're seeing, if it sounds ridiculous. And you found an article too.
Right. I will link to the article, but I'm not exactly sure if it's behind a paywall
yeah.
because it's The Atlantic. Mm-hmm. So I have some highlights that we can share from that article because, I never know if that's behind a paywall. So blurbs. And I think you and I have mentioned this before. Mm-hmm. I am becoming more and more discouraged by blurbs, although they do still get me. But what I'm finding is the ones that get me and really make me think, huh, okay, let me take a closer look at that book or make me excited about reading the book is if it's an author that I trust
yeah.
and is not blurbing everything under the sun, and if they actually put something thoughtful in the blurb mm-hmm. and it's not filled with adjectives, which I will share my yeah. least liked adjective that I cannot stand. Yeah. So what are your thoughts about where you stand with blurbs?
Yeah. I honestly don't mind them, mainly because I don't really pay attention. I don't look at them like that because I'm a seasoned reader. And I know, like, there's other things that will get me to read a book other than a blurb. So they kind of just wash over me, to be honest with you. However, it does make me think about, you know, we're reading a silly number of books a year. I mean, a really high number of books a year. I know there's a lot of readers that read like 10 books a year. And I'm quite sure that they are using these blurbs to help them decide, oh, they'll see like, oh, Stephen King blurbed it. Great. I like Stephen King. Let me pick it up. Whereas they don't kind of recognize that he blurbs everything. You can hardly find a book that's not blurbed by the man. And so I know there are readers that rely on blurbs. And I think if the blurbs are oversold, like they most oftentimes are, they will be disappointed. One of the things that really stuck out for me from the article, and I think you're right, it is behind a paywall, but this was not. What happened was an arms race. So it used to not really be a thing, blurbs. There were some, but it wasn't like it is now. People figured out that they helped sell books. So more mm-hmm. effort was put into getting them until a point was reached where they didn't necessarily make any positive difference. Except it's that not having them would likely ruin a book's chances.
Yeah.
And I can see that. I can sort of see that. If you are somebody that puts stock into it, like, why would I pick this book up?
Mm-hmm. Well, does it make you feel any certain way? So let's pretend we're shopping at the bookstore mm-hmm. and you see a book with no blurbs. Mm-hmm. Would you as a reader think, huh, no one cared enough to blurb this book. Therefore, it's not good. It must not be good.
My thought is that the publisher is not putting a lot of dollars behind it. So I'd be curious to know if it were a debut. I'd be curious to look at maybe, but I might just pass it up because I'm like, oh, I don't know what this is. You know, there's nothing, because there's so many books. There's nothing here for me to really grab onto unless there's like a shocking cover or some other reason that's grabbing me. I don't know though. I was going to say blurbs are kind of like the cover. A good cover can sell me, a good blurb can sell me, but like a bad cover, if there's other things I like about it, it's not going to turn me away, and not having one's not going to turn me away. But I don't know if that's true. I think covers are more important to me because they give you an idea about what to expect. Again, for example, The Divorcees, it kind of looks, you could easily think that was a thriller if it were not for the blurb. Like you could just pick it up thinking, oh, okay, this is going to be a thriller. But yeah, it makes me think that not a lot of dollars were put into the marketing of this book, or no one asked authors to, or maybe they did and they didn't get good ones.
Yeah. And from what I'm reading, they're putting the burden on the authors to go get their blurbs. And really, don't they have enough to do? I mean, they've written the book.
For real.
Now they have to try to get blurbs.
Yeah.
I personally think it's out of control.
Yeah. I agree.
I know parts of, there was a part of the Atlantic article that said someone had suggested that there be a moratorium on blurbs. And I think that would be a great idea. I would imagine that maybe that authors would like to see that too. That has to be so hard, especially for a debut author to try to get their own blurbs. This was something else I told you I wanted to mention. I subscribe to an author's Substack. And I am not sharing like who it is because it won't matter. You can't read what she wrote because it's behind a paywall. So I'm one of her paying subscribers. She's a nonfiction and also has a couple, at least one fiction book. And she talked recently about blurbs and said that she was approached. She's a UK, United Kingdom author. She was sent an email asking if she would read a certain book and blurb it. And she said, I don't have time to do that. And the publisher responded and said that was okay. If she would still blurb it, they would send her a variety of dummy blurbs for her to choose from. She wrote, is this a thing? Do people know this was happening? Because
no.
I didn't.
I had no
idea. I read that and I was like, oh, okay. Now we know that this is actually happening. And she declined and, you know, said she declined anything and deleted the email. This is happening.
That's a problem because I could not be more invested in the book world, and I didn't know that. And I didn't even know how blurbs come. I've heard tell of like, oh, you know, I like this author, so I asked him to read my book. I also thought there was marketing support from the publisher behind it, but it sounds like maybe not. Or maybe in this case, they were, you know, willing to pay, you know, willing to offer some dummy blurbs, which is why they're probably all sounding similar.
Exactly. And in the Atlantic article, someone from Penguin Random House is quoted as saying that there has been times where authors don't have time to read the book. So the marketing team will write some blurbs for them and they'll sign off on the blurbs. It's just discouraging.
Yeah,
it's discouraging. For just some fun. Okay, we brought some blurbs,
yes.
Right? Did you bring a couple?
I did, yes.
I brought a couple too. And I had to bring a blurb from Stephen King because—
The king of blurbs.
I love Stephen King's, not every book he writes, but you know how we feel about Stephen King. But I'm sorry, I don't trust his blurbs. So here's one of his blurbs, recent blurbs. A world-class whodunit. He blurbed that for Listen for the Lie by Amy Tintera, a world-class whodunit.
Yeah.
I don't know. How do you feel about that blurb?
It was. I mean, it was a whodunit. And I really enjoyed the book. I mean, world class. It was a highly rated book for me. It was fun, but no one's going to pick it up. I'm like, yeah, this is a fun whodunit. I mean, maybe. I like that, though. I like that. One that I brought that worked for me, and it's because of the author, it's Gillian Flynn. Mm-hmm. I know she has her own imprint. This is not one of hers. I'm sure I've seen her before, but she talks more specific. Okay, so she says Sarah Langan, it's Sarah Langan's new book called A Better World. It comes out today, April 9th, actually. Sarah Langan never ceases to amaze. A Better World is terrifying, shocking, sinister, and yet heartfelt and often hilarious. And that gets me because if those three things are true, terrifying, shocking, sinister, and heartfelt, I'm okay. Mm. I'm good because that's telling me I'm getting good character development, which is something I like. Now, I will have to report back because we'll see if it holds up to it. I'm going to, you know, give this a shot, and I'm curious to see what I think about it.
Okay. I want to give an example of a blurb that works for me and mm-hmm. I agree with. Mm-hmm. I think that this speaks to this blurb is more insightful. And this is a blurb for Leaving by Roxana Robinson. Mm-hmm. And it's by Meg Wolitzer. And she said, Leaving is as absorbing as it is haunting. Powered by Roxana Robinson's deep understanding of ambiguities, allegiances, and the lengths people must sometimes go to navigate them. Mm-hmm. I like that.
It's specific. It's giving
it's
you...
It's specific. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's setting the tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tone. That does... I don't know. It tells me more about the book, I think, and I do agree with that, having read the book. I think that's accurate. So I guess, I don't know, I'm probably landing on the longer a blurb is with more detail, the more I'm likely to buy into it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm holding an ARC, and it's called The Garden by Claire Beams, another book that comes out today on April 9th. And something I don't like about this is that on the cover, it says, Intoxicating, Rachel Yoder. Needle Prick Prose, Kelly Link. A Marvel, Paul Tremblay. And I'm like, what are all these, like, sinister, you know, shimmering, miraculous. And I'm like, this is annoying. What is this one word? And you turn it over and you can see, more specifically, deliciously eerie and brilliantly written, a shimmering, strange, important novel by Rufy Thorpe. It gives you the full blurb. So they're just taking words out.
They're taking words.
And that annoys me specifically. Mm-hmm. And you haven't said it yet, but I can tell you this is one of my words that annoys me because I'm like, really?
Which one? Intoxicating?
Miraculous.
Oh, miraculous.
Okay. Is it really miraculous? Are we really getting miraculous here? I hope so, but I'm skeptical.
Right. Okay. Do you know what word I can't? Do you know what word
I have
cannot,
no idea.
I cannot have devoured. Devoured.
Oh my God. And they say it all the time.
Did you really? Did you devour it?
I mean, devoured this.
Because you know what that makes me think of? Food, a food description. Mm-hmm. And that's not my favorite in
that is true.
In my book. So, but that word is used all the time in blurbs.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Now it's going to be one of the ones that I notice. It's because they're just like such hyperboles. I'm okay. It's miraculous, life-changing. Like it's a marvel.
Masterful.
Yeah, that's another one. So,
oh,
I don't know. Blurbers, beware, I guess. Take them with a grain of salt, just like anything else. But yeah, what you told me about that, or what you told us about that Substack is very, it's juicy.
I mean, and it's straight from an author who has experienced this. So, I mean, you know, and like anything else in publishing or marketing and reader, just know, like the more knowledge you have, the more you can make an informed decision and just maybe don't always get pulled in by some of these blurbs.
Yeah, exactly. Like just kind of, you know, note it and then, okay, are there other things that's going to pull me into this story?
Mm-hmm. And it's fun to go back and once you finished a book and see if you agree with some of the blurbs. So
yeah, no, definitely. All right, well, we'll get into the books. And my first is Annie Bott by Sierra Greer. And I took a look at some of the blurbs to see if there were any that were noteworthy and not really. Mm-hmm. Like none were, you know, one way or the other. But boy, am I glad I picked this up because I have to say I didn't, the premise didn't do anything for me. I was in need of an audiobook and I turned it on within 3 minutes. I was like, oh yeah, okay, I'm good. I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because it's just very much for me. So this book is said to be a powerful, provocative novel about the relationship between a female robot and her human owner. That's when I was like, okay. And it explores questions of intimacy, power, autonomy, and control. So Anniebot was created to be the perfect girlfriend for her human owner, Doug. Designed to satisfy his emotional and physical needs, she has dinner ready for him every night, wears the outfits he orders for her, and adjusts her libido to suit his moods. True, she's not the greatest at keeping Doug's place clean, but she's trying. She's trying hard. And she's learning. So she's learning. She's able to learn things based on, you know, past mistakes or, you know, corrections that Doug makes. Doug says that he loves that Annie's AI makes her seem more like a real woman. So Annie explores the human traits such as curiosity, secrecy, and longing. But becoming more human also means becoming less perfect. And as Annie's relationship with Doug grows more intricate and difficult, she starts to wonder, does Doug really desire what he says he wants? And in such an impossible paradox, what does Annie owe herself? Again, this was my kind of book from the jump. It made me question humanity because the book is narrated by Annie. You're in her mind and you are hearing her interpret things that Doug is saying and trying to please Doug and not understanding some of the reactions that Doug has. So she's like a sentient robot. And it's interesting because there are many different, in this world, there are many different types of robots. There are, they call them Stellas. There are Stellas specifically for childcare, some that are for cleaning, some that are cuddle bunnies, which is more of the girlfriend role. And Annie is a cuddle bunny. Her life literally revolves around keeping Doug happy. She can read his mood. And a lot of the book is like, oh, Doug's at a 4. How do I fix this? You know, and no one can tell. They are very lifelike. No one can tell by looking at them that they're not human. And he informs his friend Roland, like he ends up coming over and he becomes the only person that knows about Annie. And yeah, things evolve from there. It's about their life together. And it is such a interesting story. And what I loved is that she has small privileges. And as the book goes on, she earns more and more privileges. You know, she starts to be able to go outside and this and that. And one of the things she escapes by is reading. So at first, she was only allowed to read like one book and she read it over and over and over and over. And then, you know, as it goes on, she becomes able to read more. Not that she couldn't do it, but he wasn't giving her texts. And what is so brilliant about this is as the story goes on, Annie gets more independent and gets smarter. And the author has her use bigger words and make more keen observations. And like, it was really cool how the author was able to do this. I will say it's quite sad in some areas. You really, really, you'll read this and immediately feel for Annie and want the best for her. Even though Annie is not a human, Doug's the human. I was on Annie's side, you know, and you'll can kind of read through and go from there. If you are interested in a book that it's contemporary fiction with a little tiny bit of sci-fi element, nothing that's inaccessible. But if you want something with a really unique premise that will suck you in, I did the audio over the course of a few days. I love this book. It had questions and ponderings on humanity, what it is to be a person, and what we owe ourselves. It was really, really good. And I'm super glad I read it. That was Anniebot by Sierra Greer.
Oh, okay. Good review. I was thinking what while you were talking, and then you ended up saying it, that that sounds like a really unique premise.
Yes.
And gosh, yeah. Man, sometimes these authors can really come up with some such interesting things to write about. That, yeah.
Thankfully.
So were you, yeah, I know. Were you happy with the like how it ended up too, or are you not, can you not
I'm going
to
be ambiguous. I'm not going to tell you because
I'm really curious. I'm sitting here thinking about, I wonder how it all ends for her. All right. Well,
I'm trying not to react. I'm like,
okay. I have a very different book to start with than Anniebot. You will not be surprised when you hear that I read this book. It is The Backyard Bird Chronicles by Amy Tan.
I swear to God.
listen, it comes out April 23rd. So you, You know, if anybody knew this was coming out, you know I'm going to be reading it. I actually listened to the audio. Amy Tan narrates this. I did a combination because I do have it for my Kindle. And she illustrates oh my gosh, now I got to buy a print copy because her illustrations. But anyway, let me tell you about it. So in 2016, author Amy Tan grew overwhelmed by the state of the world. In search of peace for herself and just in general, she turned toward the natural world just beyond her window, and specifically the birds flocking to the feeders in her yard. She began taking nature journaling classes with John Muir Laws. During the pandemic shutdown, she spent long hours observing the behavior of wild birds in her backyard, and her editor, her book editor, suggested she turn those pencil sketches, colored portraits, and journal notes into an illustrated book. And that is what we have. So what ended up beginning as an attempt to find solace turned into something far greater. Let me tell you, far greater. She took this opportunity to savor quiet moments, to connect to nature in a meaningful way, and imagine the intricate lives of the birds she admired. Tracking the natural beauty that surrounds us, these bird chronicles map the passage of time through daily entries, thoughtful questions, and beautiful original sketches. I got to tell you, I initially thought when I started this, all right, Amy Tan's just going to tell us about some of the birds in her backyard. And I had no idea what to expect. And as soon as I started listening, I love her style of writing, as well as her joy and passion that immediately came through. I found this to be extremely thoughtful, engaging, informational. Her writing leans more towards the literary side, which really works for me. But this is not just any bird journal. She truly provides specific knowledge, insight, and wisdom about an incredible variety of birds. You will be shocked at what she sees. And truly, this obviously is not going to be for everyone, but you know, I entered my hummingbird era last summer. I cannot wait for them to return. And she does talk quite a bit about hummingbirds. And I learned some new things that I cannot wait to apply. I need to check my feeders. I need to make sure I've got like these. She had me thinking about things in a different way. Now, she is beyond, she calls herself an amateur birder. To me, I felt like, oh my gosh, she's bordering on professional. Like this is way above and beyond what I would consider amateur. So know that you are not just going to hear someone talking about, like I would be, if it was me, I'd be saying, I saw 4 bluebirds in my backyard today.
Right.
That is not what you are getting in this story. It is so incredibly researched. I mean, she really tackled birds and she learned, I mean, she shares her knowledge. And you know what I have said before about things that I really like, especially in my nonfiction, is when a passionate person shares their knowledge and love for their passion. And that is absolutely what Amy Tan has done in this book. I loved it. She also has observations on nature and wildlife. It really elevated my knowledge. Something that also makes her book really unique is the personal sketches. And I do think it's worthwhile to get this in print when it comes out, because I couldn't even read a lot of her personal notes on the illustrations on my Kindle. And you definitely miss all of that in the audio. So I think the perfect combination would be audio, because she narrates and it's fantastic, and then print so that you could see her illustrations. If you would like what I think would be a fantastic book flight, Then pair this with Better Living Through Birding, Notes from a Black Man in the Natural World by Christian Cooper, which was my bird book last spring. So this one is The Backyard Bird Chronicles by Amy Tan, and it comes out April 23rd.
That's awesome. This is Amy Tan of the Joy Luck Club?
Yes, Amy Tan of the Joy Luck Club. And really I have not read the Joy Luck Club. So this is my first book by her, but I want to now. Mm-hmm. I really, really like her writing style.
Mm-hmm. That's on my backlist, want to get someday. Mm-hmm. That's what I should have read for books we've been meaning to read.
Yeah.
There's still time. truly. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, good. I'm glad you found that one. I have a book that I absolutely devoured, Renee. I devoured this book.
I devoured it.
It's What Happened to Nina by Dervla McTiernan. Look at my tabs, babe. Look at my tabs. I know.
Whoa.
I know. Okay.
So. I need to not only know about your thoughts on this, but I need to know about all those tabs.
Okay. I will definitely fill you in. Okay, and I'm laughing here because let me read you the blurb I grabbed before Renee and I spoke about our thoughts on blurbs. It says, this is by Karen Slaughter, gripping and full of tension with twist after unexpected twist. You won't just read The Murder Rule, you'll devour it. Actually, you know what? That's old. That's for a different book. Damn it.
Oh, really?
That's for The Murder Rule, not for What Happened to Nina.
Oh, shucks. Did they put that on What Happened to Nina?
Yeah, it's in her. It's not on this book. You know what, though? They do do that. I've seen that before. And it makes me crazy. I'm holding an ARC, so I don't have any. I don't see any blurbs on this one. But it bugs me when they do that. Because for me personally, I read The Murder Rule, maybe 3 stars. This is miles and miles and miles stronger. I gave this one 5 stars. It is about Nina and Simon. They are the perfect couple. They are young, fun, and deeply in love until they leave for a weekend at his family's cabin in Vermont and only Simon comes home. So the big question is, what happened to Nina? And nobody knows. Simon's explanation about what happened in their last hours doesn't quite add up. And Nina's parents are understandably upset. They're pushing for answers. And Simon's parents are just as equal or just as eager to push against them and to protect him. Because he's like, that nothing happened. He's telling you what happened. They hire these expensive lawyers and get a PR firm to try and throw people off. Because they always say, it's always the boyfriend. It's always the husband. And so they like hire this PR firm to try and protect him. And soon the story becomes, how far will each family go to do what's best for their child? There's accusations, there's counter-accusations, and everybody chooses a side, including the people in the community and the people online and just everybody, because this story goes pretty viral. There are armchair investigators, there's conspiracy theories, and Nina is this beautiful young girl. They're showing videos of her. And there's people that have full social media accounts dedicated to trying to figure out what happened to Nina. And Nina's family actually gets they become under siege as well, but they never lose sight of trying to figure out where Nina is and what's going on. But Simon's family is super wealthy and they're super powerful. Nina's family becomes under siege as well, but they never lose sight of what's most important. And that's, of course, finding their daughter. And boy, oh boy, I have so many notes on this one. This is the thriller. I thought this was thrilling for me. There were no dumb twists. I'm getting kind of burnt out with, some random person from the bar. Like, I'm getting burnt out on that storyline. There are fully realized characters. This is, unfortunately, very realistic. I feel like this could have happened. I think there were some great reveals, and this book is gut-wrenching. When I tell you I cried at multiple points, because you're just thinking, oh boy, you're putting yourself in the situation, which is some of the best type of reading for me. It made me think about my true crime consumption, and is any amount of true crime consumption okay, or true crime entertainment okay, especially when when it's real time, when it's live. I think there's a lot of good that can come out of the media asking questions and, demanding answers. I think there's a lot of bad that comes out of that. It just asks some really good questions. And I have this question at the end, and I can't read it to you because it's a big spoiler. But listen to me when I say, if your book club or people that you have in your life like to read mystery thriller, definitely recommend this book, because I have some questions. I think there's just so much to unpack. My book club, if you're listening, we're going to be reading this soon. So get your copy now. It's dark. I mean, no doubt about it. This is dark. But it also made me think of you a little bit, Renee, and me. I have two daughters. You have two sons. Mm-hmm. And it's like the parenting is different, particularly mm-hmm. when they're adults. And I'm buzzing. I love this book. I loved it. And I read it on an air. I read it when we were in New York. And I just love that we had a long, long, long travel day between trains and this and that. And I'm just happy I had a book with me, particularly one that I liked so much. So this goes to show I was not going to read this because I did not like the murder rule. And I know you were surprised. You're like, oh, you're bringing that one. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm so glad I did. It goes to show don't, you know, write authors off forever if they write one book that you didn't like. I loved it. Talk to me if you've read it. It's What Happened to Nina by Dervla McTiernan.
Okay. Well, guess what?
Did you read it?
No, I did not. In my head, I would have loved to have so that I could talk with you. I started it.
Okay.
And I'm about 30%.
Oh, good. Okay. So you're going to fly through it. So you reach out to me at the end.
Well, I'll
message
yes,
me.
I will.
Abby. How do I save? Yeah. Because I have a good question.
Okay.
Oh,
yes,
it's so good.
And you're right. I am finding myself putting myself in their position. Both of them.
Yeah.
Especially because my sons are adults, and one of my sons especially travels quite a bit. And I'm thinking, I mean, what would you do, especially when they're adults? And I mean, yeah, we have easy contact with our kids with cell phones, mm-hmm. but it's possible that when your kids are adults, you know, you don't necessarily talk to them every day.
Oh, I said this.
It just really got me thinking.
Jonathan. Yeah. I said, how are we supposed to live with our girls out in the world just walking around?
I'm saying this,
and it's so ironic because he and I are, we have parents, and like, we're in New York. Random. Like, my parents did not even probably know what state I was in. I mean, they knew I was in New York, but like, mm-hmm. they had no idea outside of that. I'm like, at some point, they're just not in the house anymore. I could cry.
I know.
I mean, my girls are 6 months and almost four, so it's different, but mm-hmm. oh my God.
Well,
this is what I'm
telling
you. This book is emotional. It's going to get you.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Read it and report back.
I will have finished it probably, hopefully, tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be today.
Do you have
the
audio?
Yes, I have the ebook, and then I ended up grabbing the audio on Audible.
Okay. Because I don't have the audio.
I couldn't find it anywhere except mm-hmm. Audible.
Okay, cool.
Yep. So, okay. My next book is possibly something you wouldn't expect me to bring or to read, and I really loved it. It's Colton Gentry's Third Act by Jeff Zentner, and it comes out April 30th. Have you heard of this one, Tina?
Mm-mm, I don't think so.
Okay. I did a combo print and audio, and the audio is great. Now, Colton Gentry is quite the perfect name because he's a country music star. I like country music. We have been to many a country music concert. So I kept picturing, for Colton Gentry, I kept picturing a bit of Eric Church. Sometimes I picture Cole Swindell. If you are country music listeners, you'll know who I'm talking about. Okay. So in this story, Colton Gentry is riding high. His first hit in nearly a decade has caught fire. And he's the opening act for a country megastar. He's married to a super popular female country music star. But he is spiraling. Only a few weeks earlier, his best friend Dwayne was murdered on stage by a mass shooter at a country music festival. And one night during this opening, when he's the opening act during this concert, he really hits, quote unquote, rock bottom. He is very drunk on Jim Beam, per him. And he stands before a sold out arena filled with country music fans and offers his unfiltered opinions on guns and gun violence. And that does not go over well. And immediately his career and marriage implode. I mean, really, truly, things go downhill real quick for him. And he ends up being left with very few choices and very little money. So he ends up heading back to his Kentucky hometown. And there he has resigned himself to has-beendom, which I love that. I love that phrase.
Yeah, it's good.
Until a chance encounter at his town's new farm-to-table restaurant gives him a second chance. Okay, this story is told with alternating perspectives between present day and his senior year of high school and beyond. So eventually those storylines will converge. But you also get in that past storyline, you get a lot of understanding about his first love and the grief that was with that, as well as his relationship with Duane and their friendship and how that grew. And this is really a story about navigating grief, undoing past heartbreaks, coming home, and next acts in life. And okay, listen to this blurb. Readers are going to devour this big-hearted story of redemption. All right.
We hit on two blurbs with devour without even trying. Like,
I'm telling
it's
you.
It's an epidemic.
I mean, I don't like that word, but I will accept it for this story. This is a big-hearted story. You know what? There's a little bit of everything in this story. There's some romance. It's definitely a contemporary fiction type of story. There's found family. There's family dynamics. There's also friendship. And then there are themes in this story that are quite traumatic. And you do need to realize that this is not a lighthearted story, although it is a big-hearted story. Definitely not lighthearted. Colton himself is really struggling with some very, very hard issues in his life. And I think the author did a really great job of highlighting that and showing the reader, like, realistically how someone struggles, but yet, you know, can work the steps to get themselves in a better place. And I'm being very vague about that because I don't want to give anything away about this story. I loved the romance that was in this story was exactly my type of romance because we have mature people who respect each other and don't play any games. And that's what I prefer if I'm going to read romance in any type. I just prefer that. I don't want I don't want any of the, you know, some of the other trope stuff that you get and the miscommunication. I don't like that. Although there might be a little, but anyway, I'll leave it at that. The only criticism I have for this, and it's a me criticism because I know a lot of people are really going to love this, but if you may notice in the description, I mentioned farm to table restaurant, and we get a lot of food writing.
Uh-oh.
And as soon as that came, that we got to that part, I was like, oh no. I just don't enjoy it. But for those out there listening, if you love to read about delicious meals and how they are created and the ingredients, and then you will love this. That is just that's just something I don't get into. But I still love the book. It's Colton Gentry's Third Act by Jeff Zentner.
That sounds intriguing. It reminds me of that one book that I read that I didn't like that you liked a lot.
Which one?
The guy who was a music star. A lot of people really like it. But that's one of my anti-buzzwords is or anti-like tropes, if you will.
Music.
It's not a trope, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's wrap things up with our shelf additions. And I use my new format, my new Libib way to find one. And it's There's Always This Year by Hanif Abdurraqib. And I add this to my TBR because Liz at Liz's Reading on Instagram says that this is the most beautiful memoir maybe ever. Goodbye. Tell me more. It's also about basketball. And he is a National Book Award finalist for A Little Devil in America, which I also know. You'll like this. He grew up in Columbus, Ohio in the 1990s. You know this person? Or you know this
Yes,
book?
I have his book.
Oh,
I have
fantastic. The book.
And I've watched a couple interviews with him. And he still lives here in Columbus.
Oh, a Columbus guy. Well, let me tell you about it.
Yep.
He witnessed a golden era of basketball, one in which legends like LeBron James were forged and countless others weren't. His lifelong love of the game leads Abdur-Aqib into a lyrical, historical, and emotionally rich exploration of what it means to make it, who we think deserves success, the tension between excellence and expectation, and the very notion of role models, all of which he expertly weaves together with intimate, personal storytelling. I mean, that is a long sentence, but here is where I would like to tell you about the form on my father's jump shot, he writes. The truth, though, is that I saw my father shoot a basketball only one time. This is brimming with joy, pain, solidarity, comfort, outrage, and hope. No matter the subject of his keen focus, whether it's basketball or music or performance, his exquisite writing is always poetry, always profound, and always a clarion call to radically reimagine how we think about our culture, our country, and ourselves. Listen, sounds exciting. I mean, sounds really moving, and I am in a basketball mood, so I will definitely be giving this a shot. It's There's Always This Year by Hanif Abdur-Aqib.
Okay. Yeah. I did grab that on audio too, because one of the interviews I watched with him, he mentioned just how much it took for him to do the audiobook. So he narrates it, and I feel like that's going to be a really great way to take this book in.
Yeah, I think so.
My shelf edition is The Heart in Winter by Kevin Barry, and it comes out July 9th. Now, I did not know who Kevin Barry is, but apparently this is his first novel set in America, and it's billed as savagely funny and achingly romantic, and it's a tale of young lovers on the lam in 1890s Montana.
Ooh.
So, I know, interesting. It's October 1891, and a hard winter is approaching across the Rocky Mountains. In Montana, which is rich on copper mines and rampant with vice and debauchery, there is a hard-living crowd of immigrant Irish workers. And here we find Tom Rourke, a young poet and ballad maker of the town, but also a doper, a drinker, and a fearsome degenerate. Just as he feels his life is heading nowhere fast, Polly Gillespie arrives in town as the new bride of the extremely devout mine captain, Long Anthony Harrington. Okay. What transpires is a thunderbolt love affair that takes spark between Tom and Polly, and they end up striking out west on a stolen horse, moving through the badlands of Montana and Idaho, and briefly an idyll of wild romance perfects itself. But hot on their heels is a posse of deranged Cornish gunmen, and they are closing in fast. With everything to lose and the safety and anonymity of San Francisco still a distant speck on the horizon, their choices will haunt them for the rest of their lives. All right.
Okay.
I don't know. It sounds quite interesting, but this one is The Heart in Winter by Kevin Barry.
I like that setting, though. That kind of grabbed me.
It feels like it could really work, and especially because it sounds like they take off together, so what's going to happen? I don't know. I like a love story on the lam. I'm willing to give it a try.
I like the phrase on the lam.
I know.
That's it for today. We thank you for spending a part of your day with us. Links to all the books mentioned can be found in the show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can help us by following us wherever you listen and by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us get our show out to new listeners and grows our audience. And don't forget, if you would like access to exclusive bonus content and community, you can join us for $5 a month on patreon.com/booktalketc.
If you'd like to connect with us, email us at booktalketc@gmail.com. You can also find us at booktalketc on Instagram, Tina at tbretc, and me, Renee, at It's Book Talk. Talk to you next week. In the meantime, remember,
everything's better with books. I don't mean to jinx it, but like, we haven't had any tech issues.